Did you know that the Pop Culture Preservation Society is on Patreon? Patreon allows you to support our work by becoming dues-paying members of our society. We are an independent, women-run endeavor with a commitment to delivering the highest quality listening experience to our community. And so we've taught ourselves how to record, edit, and produce a podcast in midlife, a time when most of us are asking our kids how to regram a TikTok, so that we can deliver episodes that truly speak to you. Support from PCPS patrons means that we can devote more of our time and resources to the content, sources, equipment, software, hosting, and research that you've come to depend on without worrying about how to pay the bills. So thank you. We appreciate you from the bottom of our bell-bottomed hearts.
Mitch turns around and kicks Tiffany like he's kicking a field goal. She goes flying. And she lands with a thud on the floor, lifeless, and I am scarred. She looks like a feather duster on the ground.
Hello world, is a song that we're singing. Come on, get happy. A whole lot of loving is what we'll be bringing. We'll make you happy.
We had a dream. Welcome to the Pop Culture Preservation Society, the podcast for people born in the big wheel generation who knew for certain that one of these two things would end them, kidnapping or quicksand.
We believe our Gen X childhoods gave us unforgettable songs, stories, characters, and images. And if we don't talk about them, they'll disappear, like Marshall, Will, and Holly on a routine expedition.
And today, we'll be saving the movie that tried to soften our fear of being kidnapped by introducing us to a cute, scruffy little dog, Benji.
I'm Carolyn.
I'm Kristen.
And I'm Michelle. And we are your pop culture preservationists.
His theme song is I Feel Love. It's won a Golden Globe and an Academy Award nomination. Critics across the country are saying he should win an Academy Award himself for his outstanding acting performance in his first full-length motion picture. And audiences everywhere are calling him America's new most huggable hero.
I feel love all around. I can feel it.
In 1974, a movie came along that would affect me in a way that I'm not sure another movie did for many years. I loved it. I was terrified by it. And I watched it not only in the theater at age 5, but every time it aired on television. Today, 50 years later, I still love it and am still terrified by it, no matter how cute that dog is. The movie, of course, is Benji. Benji was written, produced, and directed by Joe Camp. Way to commit to the project, Joe.
Yes. Yeah.
And is the first in a series of 5 films about the golden bedraggled dog named Benji, who trotted and sniffed his way into so many of our little Gen X hearts. The film grossed $45 million on a budget of $500,000. Listen to that. 1974.
Yes. Wait, tell me again. How much?
The film grossed $45 million.
In 1974.
And it had a budget of $500,000.
Oh, a thousand. They had thousands?
Like half a million. Yeah. Kristen, do that math real quick.
Wow. Yeah. I can't.
A lot.
That's a good, that's a little bit of profit.
But that's insane,
a good return
right?
on investment. That's
there you
what
go. The ROI. Yeah. The ROI was really good.
Look
you
at us.
You should like teach economics.
Mm-hmm. I should.
Here's an interesting fact. The movie was turned down by every studio in Hollywood. Joe Camp had to form his own film company to distribute the film worldwide. Again. Well,
what
committing
that,
to this project, believing in it, committing to it.
And this is not, it's so interesting, that fact, because it's a movie about a little dog and some kidnappers. And it's not like Schindler's List. It's not, it wasn't somebody who had a message to spread or a story that would change people's lives. It's about a puppy.
Well, exactly. But the movie poster does proclaim that Benji is the most talked about, highly acclaimed family picture of our time, maybe of all time.
Benji, the most talked about, highly acclaimed family picture of our time, maybe of all time.
Whoa.
Those are some big words to live up to, right?
And talk about a passion project. I mean, yes. To me, that is what this sounds like with what he was willing to do, start his own production company and, you know, basically be a door-to-door salesman to get it distributed and all that.
Well, I want to ask you guys, what are your memories of this movie? Is it more kidnapped than just the gags?
That is an image. Those children with the gags pulling their mouths. That's a horrible image for a child.
It is. And what is it about the gags? I just want to time out about gags in general. Okay. Not just in this movie, but that was always a thing. Like when anyone got kidnapped in the 70s. And really, it's not, I mean, you can still like scream and stuff.
You can scream,
you just
sure.
can't really like articulate or word.
Just like this.
But you can still scream.
Help! Yeah. Help!
Why do they think that was an effective tool? I can see, you know, our hands behind our back tied, but I don't understand the gag.
More
I don't
terrifying, understand the gag. Like when you've seen where they like tape their mouth shut. That's terrifying,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, and that's effective.
Like, but the gag is, however, like chicken or egg here question, is it because of Benji or did that come after that when we all imagined being kidnapped, we imagined the gag?
It's because of Benji.
100%. I think it is too, because I was only five. So I probably wasn't having like visions of being kidnapped before Benji. It just
Benji. But I think in the 70s, you know, I think we would have seen Charlie's Angels if they got kidnapped. In their mouth too. It's just like the classic, whatever you call that. Like,
it's a trope. It's a trope.
Kidnapped
children. I definitely saw it in the theater with neighborhood kids and with a bunch of moms and things like that. And then, of course, on TV multiple times.
Oh yeah.
I had both the novelization from Scholastic books, and
yes.
I also had the record.
Carolyn, you were older, a little bit older than Kristen and
I.
Did you still love it?
I would have seen it in, for our Houston listeners, in Meyerland. And I'm sure my sister probably would have gone too. I was trying to gauge the ages. I do think that she was there. And it was such an event when we went to the movies too.
Oh, yes.
I do know, Kristen, like you, I had all the Benji stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Like I had the album too. While this movie is jam-packed with stars, which we'll also get to in a minute, there is only one that really matters, right?
This is true. Let's talk about the star of that movie. Okay, and first thing for all of our listeners to know, his character's name was Benji, but mm-hmm. Benji was played by the actor Higgins.
This hurts my heart. I have to tell you, and when I learned of this fact when I was like 9, I was like, no.
But yet that is his name. And he first came to national attention as, sadly, the uncredited dog who played the character of Dog, and I'm putting that in with a capital D, on the television sitcom Petticoat Junction. Okay?
No way.
Really? He was in that show, 6 of the 7 seasons of the show, appearing in 149 episodes. But as we know, his role as Benji is really what catapulted him to celebrity status, okay? I mean, we have a cover dog. He is on the cover of Dynamite. He is a guest judge on Dance Fever, okay? I mean, he's really hit the big time. He is now, I mean, honestly, if you showed his headshot to anybody of our age, we would know who he was, though, right?
We do. Yes, 100%.
So he was discovered in 1960 by an animal trainer famed in Hollywood named Frank N. He was found at the Burbank Animal Shelter as a puppy. Okay,
oh.
This isn't some little dog that was trained from birth. He is like a true underdog story.
That was discovered at the corner?
Lana Turner.
This is a great story. He's believed to be a mix of miniature poodle, cocker spaniel, and schnauzer. He was actually, get this, 16 when he filmed Benji.
I'm doing the math on
this
that.
This makes
like,
me sad.
What are you
because
talking
you,
about?
Yes. And
I can't believe he was that old.
I know, when he was doing all that, all those stunts. He did not have a stunt double, ladies and gentlemen. That was Benji doing all those things.
He was spry.
He had to run so fast and
so long.
Yes, that could have contributed. And then with the puncture wound, probably on his underbelly.
And we'll get into this later, too. But we have all these physical things that Benji does. But let's not forget, I mean, he has some expressions. We talk about the expressions in the faces of actors that they don't have to say anything. And obviously Benji doesn't say anything. His expression, you know, the emotions he is feeling on his face. He is another level. He's way above Lassie. He deserves the stardom that came his way.
Dog movie. Oh, no. It's not a dog movie. It's a... That dog has emotions. That dog is fantastic.
I don't know if this was for all of the movies after the original, but the actor slash actress that took that role over was Ben Jean, B-E-N-J-E-A-N, who was Higgins' daughter.
Okay,
from
that's
Litter.
So cute.
And yes, and so she, if you paid close attention, Benji, you kind of see his malehood in some of the scenes. You know he's a male dog.
Malehood?
I don't know. I'm trying to make this okay.
It's called a penis.
In case kids are listening. Well, that's true. Penis.
When we were little, my sister and I would call little dog penises lipsticks.
Oh,
it always
gross.
Looks like a little lipstick.
But Benji's was not a little dog penis. He was well endowed. You see it.
Did you pause?
You can't miss it in some scenes when he, especially slow motion, it's just kind of going. So a close watcher of the
it's
following.
Just flapping right? As he runs up.
It's like a baby arm.
So the following Benji's did not have that genitalia because Benjean. Vagina.
It was his daughter.
I feel better, though, that it was his daughter. Even though the genitalia doesn't match, I'm still happy that it was his daughter.
I'm going to pull up that Dynamite cover. Kristen, if you find yours.
Yeah.
And we're going to – we would be able to tell because they look
– The coloring is a little different. Yes. There's a little different coloring around the nose.
I found it.
Yeah. And all right. Stay tuned, everybody. Kristen's looking through her stack of Dynamites that – thank you,
Does Martha. It show his – penis
it doesn't show his penis.
Okay, so I might have a hard time.
But it does have his
Did you hear Carolyn? Oh. She might have a hard time identifying.
Oh gosh. Because of all of the all of the dog penises
I don't know.
I don't know either.
We digress.
So the three of us just watched Benji again. Maybe the first time as adults, I think
for me.
It was. Yeah. And if you know you saw it, but aren't quite sure you remember it all, except, of course, for those gags and that horrific kick that still live in your brains, well, grab a snack, everyone, because we are about to save it for you. It's what we do. You're welcome.
It lights up the day like the morning sun reaching out.
We start with a pan of the house that has lived in our nightmares since 1974/75 mm-hmm. and see Benji pop his head out of a broken window with dangerously sharp glass and then hop out, surprisingly free of gashes and blood, although now I'm not so sure that he'd have a few puncture wounds.
Right.
A little underbelly or on his manhood, maybe.
I just grabbed my groin.
As the Grammy-winning theme song, I Feel Love, plays.
And it's feeling good, like I knew it would, everywhere I go. I feel love.
Recorded by the country music musician Charlie Rich, I Feel Love won a Golden Globe Award for Best Original Song in 1975. It also received an Oscar nomination for Best Original Song.
Yes,
it's a good song. By the end of the movie, I loved this song.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
I really love it. It's also 70s. It's very, very 70s.
Yes.
Very Charlie Rich.
Yes, for sure.
Well, then we get the first of many long montages of Benji trotting and sniffing his way through neighborhoods and a very 1974 town.
I mean, that whole montage, it tells a whole story.
I think it's worth mentioning that when we are introduced to Benji in this long montage where he's trotting around the neighborhoods and trotting through the downtown, this is all filmed on location, primarily in McKinney, Texas, mm-hmm. as it was in 1974.
So Benji's sniffing and trotting and sniffing and trotting, and he ends at the stately white mansion, which really that house is as iconic and memorable mm-hmm. as Benji's haunted house to me. The turret
yes,
on the house and then how
turret.
It's kind of set back between like this hedge of trees. If that's actually a house in in McKinney, Texas.
It's still there.
I watched a little YouTube video on it.
Pull up Delta and let's try to figure out how to get there. Because now that I live in Denver, I've visited like the Mark and Mindy house in Boulder. And it's pretty exciting to go and see these houses that have lived in your minds forever. I need to go see this Benji house. Well, Benji arrives and he runs up the back stairs and he scratches and paws at the back door. And now, I don't know, a full 10 minutes, 15, 30, 180
because
minutes
of the credits.
Into the movie, we finally meet Mary and the kids and learn that Benji is a free-ranging, he's just a free-spirit dog, likes to take his breakfast at the home of Dr. Chapman, his kids Paul and Cindy, and their housekeeper slash nanny, Mary.
You're late this morning. You almost missed the kids.
Now let's pause for just a minute for this slightly depressing fact. In my memory, she's an old grandmother-y type woman. You guys, Patsy Garrett, the actress who plays Mary, was 52 when they filmed this movie.
That's like a lot.
Right now,
than
listeners,
us.
If you're new to this, we are older. All three of us are older than 52 by several plus years. So what about you guys in your memory?
Oh, she's an old lady.
She was this soft, old, like the sweetest. I loved her voice. When she started speaking again, when I was just watching it, I was like, yes, that voice has lived in my head. What are your memories? Like my memories of Paul and Cindy, and like, you know, I've said many times, I was always so taken by small children in movies and in television shows. So I adored Cindy. Do you guys have memories of the children?
I felt very much that Cindy was my twin. I thought we were like the same person. I'm sure I had some of those outfits. She has these little dresses with these giant Peter Pan collars, like an oversized Peter Pan collar.
And the dog ears, pigtails, whatever you
want to
call
them. Yeah, she has the high ponytails with ribbons in them. We had the same color palette. We had the same outfits. I think I identified with her hard, really hard. I have no memories of Paul.
Well, he's a little unforgettable in the movie, let's be honest.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
A little forgettable, you mean?
Yeah, sorry.
Forgettable.
Yes, he is a little forgettable.
Yeah.
And it's established that Paul and Cindy desperately want to keep Benji as their dog, but Mary knows that their father, who she makes clear to us is a fine, kind man several times.
Several times,
won't allow it. Now, a scene, there's many scenes that stick with me, but the scene where she feeds Benji under the table in her lap, I about started crying the other night when
it's
I saw that.
It's so familiar.
Scene.
It's so freakishly
and you
familiar.
Can hear him kind of going,
yeah. And the reason that he's under the table is because the dad is coming and they don't want him to know that Benji is in the house. And so they put the dog in her lap and they cover him with the tablecloth. And then they take the food bowl because they feed him in the morning. They take the food bowl and put it under the table. Yeah. And that's where you hear that little lapping sound. And they pretend when the dad comes in that there's no dog under my lap. Don't look.
And it's established also very quickly that Mary is, you know, she's in cahoots with the kids. She also fibs to Dr. Chapman, the fine, kind man, because even though he's her boss, basically, I love that she plays along with the kids.
Oh,
it's her snack. Oh, it's her snack.
Yeah, the dog food is her snack.
Mm-hmm. Right. And this is really, to me, the first time where there's some suspense. Like, we are kind of like, is the dad going to know and what's going to happen? So, and those suspenseful moments are throughout the movie. But this was the first one where you're kind of on the edge of your seat.
And isn't it interesting, too, that because of that, Carolyn, you know, sometimes you see – and he's tall. He's imposing,
the dad,
he right?
Is.
He comes in. We could be scared, like, oh, God, is he going to get mad at them? And Joe Camp, who wrote the movie, put us at ease immediately by having – Mary has already told us he's a fine, kind man. And it's like the writer didn't want to scare us. But
comes
then
later.
That begs the question, exactly. Begs the question what he was thinking, you know, about 30 minutes later. So,
well, it's almost like he has to establish that this isn't the villain.
Right,
that's
the
coming.
Good guy, bad guy.
Oh,
yes,
good,
this is
good point.
This is not the villain. Otherwise, that could be setting up our story that they want to keep the dog and the dad is the villain and says no.
Right.
Yeah. Well, because that's, I think, what, like Carolyn was saying, like we might have all expected right away. So the kids go to school and Benji heads out. Cue trotting theme, which is always an instrumental version of I Feel Love in a different way. You're going to hear it in a lot of different tempos coming up, much like the Brady Bunch theme going to play. And we get another, like, I don't know, 59-minute montage of Benji trotting and sniffing.
It's a lot.
This time, we get to learn about Benji.
Yeah,
and the way we learn about Benji is we get to see all the places he regularly visits. And I say regularly because we will see him take this exact route about 14 more times during the movie. And the first stop is where he messes, it seems daily, with a white cat and its old lady owner who loves to gripe at him.
Stop it! Stop it! You leave my sweetie Petey alone! Ooh, you primitive, uncultured cur!
Well, you can only imagine what little Carolyn did in the movie theater. Oh my gosh! It's Aunt Bee!
It's Aunt Bee!
Aunt Bee. Yes! It's Aunt Bee from Andy Griffith and Mayberry RFD. Her name is actually Frances Bavier, I'm going to say.
Yeah.
So B-A-V-I-E-R. She's credited as kind of lady with cat. I don't even think, yeah, you know, she didn't have a name.
No. One of our followers actually told us that this was her last film appearance.
So, yes,
really?
It was. Check that it was. She retired after that to North Carolina, by the way. And we quickly learned she's nice. Like, she's like yelling at Benji, stop chasing my cat.
Well, then Benji moves on to the park where he meets up with his good officer friend.
Yeah, his next regular stop is in the park where he meets with a police officer who is played by the actor Terry Carter. I don't know if he has a name in the movie. I'm not exactly sure.
I don't think he
sure.
does. I always
he just says officer.
Like,
I don't think
officer.
A lot of people officer. Actually have names.
Let's yeah. call him Officer Friendly.
His name
forward.
Is Officer Friendly, and he calls Benji Butch.
Mm-hmm.
So this actor, Terry Carter, is best known for his role as Colonel Tig. I hope I'm saying that. Please, nobody at me. I didn't watch Battlestar Galactica, but he's Colonel Turn on Battlestar Galactica. And he was originally cast as Lieutenant Boomer on Battlestar Galactica. Mm. And this seems like, why do we care, Kristen? But he was cut from that role following a roller skating accident.
Oh, I love that.
That fractured his ankle. So they had to replace him. And they instead offered him the role of Colonel Turner, and who was the second in command on the fleet of starships. And this was notable because it gave the series Battlestar Galactica the distinction of having more than one regular African-American character in the principal cast.
Wait, why did he have to get recast? Why does the first officer do, like, lots of things on his feet?
I think he has more action. You know, he and Dirk Benedict are out, like, I don't know what they're doing. I love Dirk Benedict, by the way. But I think they're in a lot more scenes and maybe a little more action. Where
I, but I
maybe
did
Lieutenant
wonder that.
Is behind, yeah, like
one
the,
uses his ankle, but one doesn't.
Is sits.
Yeah, I think he might sit behind, like, the big board.
Officer.
You know, those
he's
boards.
At the soundboard.
The sound, yeah, big
right
boards
now,
they have
all our Battlestar
on spaceship.
Galactica fans
they're
are just
dying.
Like,
they're just
yeah,
dying. We were watching Hardy Boys. Sorry.
Then Benji trots off to Bill's Diner, where he gets a bone from my great Uncle Fitchu, or Bill, or Bill. Could be my great Uncle Fitchu. I'm not sure. Who calls Benji Sam.
He indeed does, but it's not your great Uncle Fitchu.
It's not?
No, it's Uncle Joe Carson from Petticoat Junction, everybody.
Petticoat Junction.
Oh, my God. So they already had a cute relationship.
Yeah. Yes, they mm-hmm. did. So this is Edgar Buchanan is the actor. And they didn't just have a relationship, okay? Higgins and Edgar had a very close rapport because every cast picture that was taken throughout the series of Petticoat Junction, Buchanan is shown holding or petting Higgins. They are very, very close. So it was almost like a natural probably to ask Edgar Buchanan to be in this role. One of the facts that I read was you'll notice they just kind of have a little dialogue. I mean, it's just this little comfort. Well, not dialogue, obviously, but
a monologue.
He's not doing anything. They're just kind of chatting a little bit, and he gives him the bone. It's just such a cute moment. And when you learn about their relationship from Petticoat Junction, it's kind of like a last together for them.
And he probably wasn't acting. He's like, here's your bone, buddy.
Oh, yeah.
Right,
yeah.
Exactly. And they both aren't with us that much longer either after the movie.
I feel like we should insert the sad instrumental I feel of after that conversation. Benji's next regular stop is a garbage can in the park, and then he sniffs and trots his way back to his haunted house. And honestly, we just get a good feel that Benji is living his best life. Mm-hmm. And so far, we're just along for the ride, right?
It's right.
This is
the movie.
Happy. It's
right.
Trotting
Benji
and sniffing.
Around.
Yeah, that's about to take a hard turn, everyone. Enter the bumbling burglars. Bum, bum, bum.
Mm-hmm.
or don't enter because they literally cannot break in. Honestly, before we even see them, we know they're basically Theodore and Amos from the Apple Dumpling Gang, which, fun fact, was also my favorite movie at the time. But the bumbling burglars are accompanied by Linda, who right away gives off a sweet, I'm not a bad person, I'm not a kidnapper, I'm not a killer vibe, doesn't she?
Mm-hmm. She does. And you're right. At the door is this bunch of wannabe criminals that are a cross between, like you said, the Apple Dumpling Gang and Scooby-Doo. They are basically Fred, Daphne, and Shaggy. They are actually Riley, Henry, and Linda Sue, and they are here to scope out the haunted place as a headquarters for their wrongdoings. So the Shaggy character is named Riley, and he's played by a man named Tom Lester, who is the farmhand on Green Acres and would also frequently appear on, wait for it, Petticoat Junction.
It's like a reunion.
It is. It's a reunion.
What has he been in? What has she been in?
So not just Green Acres and Petticoat Junction, but also Beverly Hillbillies too. Basically, any show where you needed a Southern accent, Tom Lester was there for you. You will recognize his voice right away. He also, incidentally, he's like the Southern Shaggy. He also, incidentally, went to Hollywood to pursue acting because the Lord told him to, and he was a literal evangelist. Like, he traveled the country speaking at revivals, trying to literally evangelize people. Like, this is where we get the word, right? So the Fred character is named Henry, and he's played by Christopher Conley, best known for his role on Peyton Place with Ryan O'Neal. And he parlayed that role into a starring role on the TV version of Paper Moon. Remember the Oscar-winning movie with Ryan O'Neal and Tatum O'Neal? Yeah. But instead of Ryan O'Neal and Tatum O'Neal, the TV show starred this dude and a young Jodie Foster. So the Daphne character is Linda Sue, and she's played by Deborah Wally, who was a veteran of beach movies and Gidget movies. And when she was in Benji, that's sort of seen as the decline of her movie career. Yeah. And I swear to God, she looks all of 21. I just have to point out, her 70s style is on point.
Yes.
She has the bell bottoms. She has the blouse tied up under her boobs.
Oh, yeah. That
like blouse. Pinky Tuscadero style. And she has a tooled leather purse that will figure prominently in the plot. And all of these people, we learn, work for Mitch.
Right.
Dun, dun, dun.
Oh.
Mm-hmm.
We don't know who Mitch is, but Benji is watching all of this very skeptically.
Oh, Benji is underneath. Taking notes.
And you can see, like Carolyn said earlier, you can almost see the wheels turning in Benji's head right then. Like, Benji knows, like, I don't know what they're up to.
But it's
But I don't like it.
Right. And he's hiding, like, under this, like, behind this little bench. And you can just see, like, it's like his brain is going.
Yeah, so Benji has his little place he's hiding. And one of the guys sets down a bag of groceries. And after they leave, Benji steals the pudding can. The pudding can.
Yeah.
And that, again, like Benji hiding under the table on Mary's lap, it's all of 5 seconds, and it is one of my favorite, most memorable parts in this movie. That pudding can, it's going to come back in a minute.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. But yes, I loved it. And it's so 74, isn't it?
It's so 74.
So we're going to cut to the next day, and the kids and Mary are on the back steps of the mansion. This is when we learn why the dad won't let them keep Benji. His brother had been bitten by a stray dog as a child and almost died. I think that's brilliant writing, Joe Campbell. Like, it could have been a million other things. That is the most obscure and probably original reason for him not letting them keep
I have allergies. Benji. The shedding, it's too hard to keep up with the dog.
So
we don't have
reasons,
time to pay attention to so many
reasons.
But
we could die. I mean, this is like, that's a
the
big one.
Dogs, basically, he tells them stray dogs carry germs.
Yes.
Well, the kids are so sad. And so then Benji trots off on yet another tour of the town. He goes sniffing and trotting past all the neighbors. But this time, when he gets to his final stop, the trash can, there's another dog there.
It's a tiny, mangy, dirty white dog. Eating trash? Like, we've never seen Benji eating trash. Like, this is even elevating. This is a just dog from the streets just trying to get the scraps that she can. And she kind of growls. They basically have this conversation back and forth in barks. I would like to point out that this entire movie We don't have any of that cheesy voiceover narration of these dogs. Yes. Like, oh, there's a foxy girl eating, yes, you know, getting trash or whatever.
No CGI mouth movie.
Right. We right. didn't need that. I mean, the movies now, they do that. We don't need that. That's how wonderful of an actor Higgins.
Oh, stellar.
Right. Yes.
He can, their expressions.
Yes, yeah, exactly. And the music. I think the music is done beautifully. It helps tell the story. Mm-hmm. We don't need words. Again, this masterful job of filmmaking.
He said, here's the score to I Feel Love. He said this to the music director. Here's the score. I want you to come up with 14 different ways.
I think the music director and the composer of the song, I think they're all the same. I think probably, there's just one.
Right,
just we
Camp.
Don't
Joe
have
Camp.
A big budget.
Joe Camp.
You could tell this wasn't like happy barking, like, oh, you're cute. How are you? It was like, get away.
This is my garbage can.
Well, yeah, because it should be known that at first it's not
right.
love. It's
they not, are not. Yeah. No, she's no. very possessive of
he's
her
like,
trash.
What are you doing at my garbage can?
Right.
And she's right. like, a woman here. Needs to eat. And he's like, but that's my food.
Totally, that's not. Can you imagine if we?
Maybe we could both have some trash.
No. Wait, I got this bone that Uncle Fitchu gave me.
Hey, everybody, let's pause here for station identification. Today's episode is brought to you in part by Hormone Harmony, a name that has so much more meaning to us now at the perfectly ripe ages of 55, 56, and 58. Longtime listeners know that the three of us are no strangers to hot flashes, night sweats, sleeplessness, and the occasional menopause moment, known more scientifically as menopause-related brain fog. Hormone Harmony contains science-backed herbal extracts called adaptogens that help the body adapt to stressors, including the chaotic hormonal shifts that happen naturally throughout a woman's life. Hormone Harmony has over 17,000 reviews online, and what you'll see them say over and over again is that they finally feel like themselves again. For a limited time, you can get 15% off your entire first order at happymammoth.com. Just use the code PCPS at checkout. That's happymammoth.com and use PCPS for 15% off today. Thanks so much to Hormone Harmony, and thanks to you for listening today.
Hey, listeners, you know that feeling you get when you discover something amazing and all you want to do is tell everybody that you know about it? Well, that's exactly how I feel about Armoire. Armoire makes getting dressed super easy and super fun. With a clothing rental membership from Armoire, you get to build the perfect wardrobe with brands that are high quality, they're unique, and they're recommended just for you. All you have to do is take a 5-minute style quiz and select items from your dynamic, personalized closet. Those styles show up to you in as little as 2 days. And then when you're ready for some new clothes, you just swap them out for more new-to-you styles. And that's exactly what I did a couple of months ago when Andy and I took a trip to Hawaii. And of course, I wanted to have some fun, beachy, cute clothes. Armoire was perfect for that. I got the most amazing outfits that I got so many compliments on. And the best part was that when we got home, all I had to do was ship those items back, and they didn't have to take up space in my closet unused for a year. Right now, our listeners can give Armoire a try and get up to 50% off their first month. That's up to $125 off. Just visit armoire.style/PCPS. That is armoire.style, armoire.style/PCPS, to get up to 50% off your first month. And you'll never have to worry about what to wear again. So try Armoire today. So eventually we kind of tell, like, he's not going to put up with that. Yeah, yeah. He's going to try to make nice. So he goes over and eventually he shares his bone that he got from, yes, Uncle Fitzhugh, yeah. Uncle Joe,
yeah,
whatever. After they've kind of made good and they're kind of friendly, he is going to take her to meet Mary. And so here, you know, cue that kind of boppy, yeah, kind of country, definitely 70s vibe song.
So Benji takes Tiffany. He's so proud of her, I think. He wants to show her off. But I also think Benji knows, like, she's kind of rough, Mary. Could you maybe, like, help her? And Mary says, I don't have time for this, but you know what? I do. And she gives her a little bath, fluffs her up, and she names her Tiffany.
I'd like to think that Benji was attracted to her before she looked beautiful.
He was showing her off.
Yes.
And
He gave her the bone.
Yeah. Right. Exactly.
Yeah. He's proud of her.
Wanting her to meet the fam, like meet all the important people in his life. including Mary. Mary names her Tiffany, and now we're going to just elevate this relationship through a romantic song playing under this beautiful montage. That classic, again, 70s montage, much like Fonzie and Pinky, where slow motion.
It's the same.
The dogs are bounding.
The dogs are bounding.
Superimposed.
Are you talking about a penis right now?
Our penis is, you know, just trailing or whatever. Flapping in the breeze.
But you're getting superimposed close-ups of their faces.
Of their faces.
And they're barking at each other, but it's like
slow-mo.
And they're kind of rolling in the ground together. And they might lick each other's faces here and there.
And it works.
We are invested. We are
they're
fully invested.
They're falling in love.
Of course.
Yeah.
So how to end this perfect date? You take her back to your haunted house and give her a dinner of a pudding cup, of course.
Pudding! Right? There's so much pudding! Okay, so then, while they're eating their pudding cup, dun-dun-dun, the wannabe criminals come back. And so quickly, Benji leads his new lover behind the bench. He's like, hide here with me.
Yes.
And the shaggy character, Riley, he comes in. He does not like this creepy house. Mm-hmm. And it is his primary job in the movie to complain about the creepy house. I don't like this place. There are ghosts here. And he's also the first one to say, hey, where's the pudding cup? Well, we know Benji and Tiffany ate the pudding cup for their first date. But Shaggy thinks it's a ghost. And he's like, zoinks. And so he's like, let's get out of here, right? But wait, Mitch is coming to check out the place. So we meet Mitch for the first time, and the mystery of the pudding cup continues while they decide where in the house they'll, quote unquote, set up. Yeah. They talk about setting up constantly, and we still don't know what they're setting up
for. No, we don't. Mm-mm.
And it's also worth noting that Linda Sue is not wearing a bra.
Sure, that's what we all noticed.
I was like in the middle of a swallow when you said that. Oh my God.
Just to point out how common it was for women to walk around braless. We didn't think anything of it, except my grandma, when she would yell at my aunt for not wearing a bra. And I was like, I don't understand why.
I thought you meant when your grandma didn't wear a bra. I was like, well, that was because you could see her nipples poking out from under her hem.
My grandma was just so mortified at my aunt, who was her daughter, walking around without a bra. And I couldn't follow the conversation. Like, I didn't even know how she could identify that she wasn't wearing a bra, because they just looked like boobs to me, which also shows you how often I saw boobs just swinging in the breeze.
Well, I think, we all did in the 70s. It's a rated G movie. It's not like this is, you know, someone's going, oh, look at the boobs.
One was looking at the boobs at all. Nobody cared. But once again, Benji is taking notes, but this time with a sidekick, with Tiffany. They're watching, and you can see their eyes moving back and forth, and they're listening about the setting up and where they're going to set up. So Mitch approves of the haunted house for setting up, and he does something creepy to Linda that shows that they're definitely lovers. I can't remember what it was. And then they all go back to the city, and after they leave, we see that Benji and Tiffany are officially sleeping together.
Also, when they're talking and you see Benji watching, Tiffany looks a little clueless, but you also get a very distinct impression that Benji already is protecting her.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I did. Yep. I probably didn't. Actually, no, that's not true. I think I always got that. I think I always knew Benji was going to protect her.
Oh, for sure.
It's
for
very
sure.
sweet. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, back at the Victorian mansion with the turret, little Cindy is begging her dad to keep Benji, but he's not hearing it. Benji has germs, like we said. Okay. You guys, Cindy is crying, but Cindy is not just crying. Cindy is like Academy Award winning crying.
Yes.
And this little scene of her crying and talking through her tears.
I'll get you any kind of dog you want, and we'll build a fence in the backyard.
We don't want any kind of dog. We want Benji. Why can't we build a fence for Benji?
It's really like stand up and give a standing
It was. It was. Not smell an onion and we'll spray, you know, do a spray bottle on your face.
It'll break your heart.
And
there was one line in particular that, you know, when you get punched in the face, it's like Husker Du plus punched in the face. And there's one line where her dad is saying he could be infested with germs and full of disease. And she's crying and she says, but daddy, he's not. I know. And that must have been on the record. That line must have been on there. I just got nipples right now. because I remember
you didn't have them before.
You guys, she's not wearing a bra, so we saw
but
them.
But Daddy, he's not.
Well, and
I
this
know.
Is and this is the scene when she's in the bell bottoms with the little
right.
kids.
Yes,
and
yes.
just so cute, you guys. And it's so
she can cry.
She yes. can cry. Oh. And I think this is why Paul is a little unforgettable. Because
yeah, because
she
he's
steals
like, yeah, I'm sad too.
He's. I'm just going to say it. He's not the best child actor.
Yeah.
And he reads his lines, but she acts, she becomes this little girl who desperately wants this dog. Well, things like, I feel like there should be some ominous music right now mm-hmm. because back at the haunted house, Theodore and Amos, Shaggy and Scooby, right. Riley and Henry. Actually,
the Apple Dumpling Gang.
They're writing a ransom note. This is the first time we realize they intend to kidnap someone. We still don't know yet who. But you guys, they're writing a ransom note on like this thick purple stationery with like a floral pattern. I swear they have a giant stack of nice stationery on the little desk. I mean, ransom notes I thought were like, you know, torn out of magazines. Like yeah. cut this
right,
letter
they're cutting out the
and
letters.
Then this letter and whatever.
Or legal notepad.
So one of the parts with that when they're writing the note, Michelle, that I thought was funny is they're trying to make it look like disguise their handwriting, like somebody would know what their handwriting looked like anyway. And so he's trying to write with his left hand. And then it's like, no, that one's not good. And so they crumple it up and throw it away on the floor. And then they write the one that becomes the actual ransom note that we'll see what happens with that.
And pay attention to that one on the floor.
That crumpled up note definitely is going to come back, right? Yeah. And Benji's watching all of this unfold when suddenly the door opens and Mitch pushes Paul and Cindy inside in full-on gags. They're crying. They're holding hands. They're holding hands.
Cue the trauma.
And I swear to God, this is the scene that's been tattooed on my brain, your brains, everybody's listening's brains for 50 years. Mm-hmm. Kidnapping and Quicksand, you guys, are two greatest fears as Gen X children.
Well, I'm glad, I guess, that they didn't show us how that happened. I actually had to stop the movie and think, did I miss something? But I thought there was kind of a leap there.
So it's Mitch who pushes them roughly in. Also, Mitch has scary eyes. I don't know
Mitch
if you guys
does have scary
Charles
eyes.
Charles Manson kind of vibes.
Yes.
Oh, I'm
God,
sorry.
Yes.
But well, it's just evil. And that and Linda Sue is like his whatever those Charles
his
Manson
lover.
Women were that like followed Charles Manson around and believed everything he said.
And poor Cindy is on with the crying again,
oh,
with
God.
The Academy Award level crying. So much so that right now, as a mom watching this, I'm worried that the actress really thinks she's being kidnapped. I'm like, she's so good at being kidnapped.
Like Kramer versus Kramer, the actor who played Mitch was probably on a method acting, and he's whispering to get her to cry, like, you're really going to get kidnapped next Tuesday.
Yeah. Like, these are actual kidnappers, and they're going to kill your parents.
Oh, my gosh.
But Linda is very kind, and she's like, can't we take off the gags? And Henry and Mitch get into some sort of fight, and suddenly things take a real hard turn because Mitch grabs a gun.
A gun?
A gun, you guys, off the grandfather clock. And even 2 weeks ago, me was like, my heart, like,
that
I don't
was
think
elite.
I remembered.
Yes.
I did not remember the gun. I think it's because,
I didn't either.
You know, they say, and I'm always worried about this, I've lost so many memories. They say you black out. Your brain protects you from a lot of bad things.
You're like, when did the gun get pulled on
me? My brain has protected me from that gun in this movie.
Because everybody in the haunted house is like, what the hell, Mitch? What the hell? And and Mitch has had it with people going, what the hell, Mitch? Because nobody wants to kidnap these kids except for Mitch. And so he gets all frustrated. He's like, well, then I'm just going to shoot you all. He's just big and mean. But they're like, why do we have to kidnap kids? But now he's got a gun. They have no choice. So that's Mitch's plan. He's like, well, see, I have a gun, so you have to kidnap the kids.
And
it's kidnap or be killed.
Yes, and I think this also provides the opportunity where we see Benji has some flashbacks of his relationship with a gun. So we learn that he had a life before, you know, he was roaming the streets of Mayberry. You could tell from Benji's expressions that this gun thing signifies something deep, and it is not good. It triggers Benji in such a way that he kind of elevates his
That's the word.
Danger.
Benji is triggered. Benji is like, hey, I know what's going on here. And he pops up from behind the couch and he knocks a picture off the wall, alerting Mitch to his presence. Mitch
with falls
the
down
gun.
The stairs.
Yes, it falls down
frame,
the stairs. Yeah. So now Mitch takes off after Benji with his gun, triggering Benji all the more. And now we get a chase through the house. And Mitch with the gun is stalking our favorite dog, right? That's not okay. That feels bad. And they're just, and again, this is a 10-minute scene and of terrifying. The guy with the gun running after our dogs through a haunted house. Yeah, it's bad.
Oh, all the things. Ugh.
But Benji is so savvy, and he jumps out the broken window, and he starts running. And this is where you start shouting to the TV, run, Benji, run! And while he's running, that's when his flashbacks are coming even harder.
Oh, it's terrible.
Benji has trauma. He's trying to outrun his trauma. And it's this guy from the park, and the gun battle, and the bad guy. And it's a long run to Paul and Cindy's house. Oh, my God.
I think it's 6 or 8 miles.
It's miles.
It's got to be. Because it's not just through nice neighborhoods. Yes. It's through alleys. It's through parks. Yes.
Through downtown.
It's through downtown.
Yes. In front of garbage cans.
In front of cars.
Yes. This movie is all about Benji running.
Yes.
And he bursts into Paul and Cindy's house where we see not just their dad and Mary, but also a bunch of FBI-looking people hanging around in the living room. None of whom seem terribly concerned.
No, I agree.
It's more like someone trespassed through our yard again. Yeah. What
and there's
are we
also
gonna,
like 10 other people just sitting on different settees and ottomans.
Yeah. Yeah. Very casual.
Mm-hmm. And they're all just hanging out.
Yeah. And I'm needing Liam Neeson in the room at this moment. And Mary's like, oh, Benji. Mary should have been like, I need those kids back. Right?
And Mary's she's not crying.
No. Nobody is crying about the kidnapped children.
There's one person like on a phone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's the only way we know that something official, that like they've reported it.
Yeah.
Because one official guy, and he's got his hand like up, pulling his coat back so we can see his badge, right?
Yeah.
So we know he's official. And he's on the phone like, all right, well, call me when the FBI gets here.
Yeah.
But everybody else is just sitting around like, well, when's the last time you saw him?
Yeah.
That. You
and
want
even
a cup of coffee?
Mary says something like, you know what? They'll be home when they get hungry. Did they have any money? Did they have any pocket money?
I'm not comfortable with any of this. And Benji also is very frustrated. He's very frustrated and he needs to get their attention.
So the FBI man does show up, and they've got the ransom note. And the camera zooms in on the ransom note, maybe 18 minutes. They're folding it, they're unfolding it. And Benji, again, is watching all of this. They've tried to kick Benji out. Mary's been like, Benji, you need to go. This isn't the time. Like, we're busy right now.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Benji finally is like, I can't take it anymore. He jumps up. He grabs the note and takes off running. And now it is like the Keystone Cops. They are all chasing him.
In a line.
Yes. Yeah, like down. And like the music should be like.
The Benny Hill music.
Yeah. And then they finally catch him. They get the note back. Well, now they toss Benji out again, and he does not know what to do. I tried so hard, Paul and Cindy. You can hear and feel his little heart breaking. And now the music turns super slow and sad, and now we have another montage. You guys, it's like Benji is doing a Charlie Brown walk, if there was one for dogs.
Yes.
While I Feel Love instrumental gets really melancholy. And Benji just walks slowly with his head hung. Again, acting, right?
Yes.
By all the usual spots. And it's crushing, it's heartbreaking, and it's probably a big reason we've all been in therapy. Gen X has been in therapy for so many years. Then there's hope because Benji sees Officer Friendly outside of the precinct and tries to alert him.
Scratch, 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 scratch.
As a viewer, you're like, yes!
Yes!
But it doesn't happen.
Okay, this scene. Maybe the best scene in the movie. Benji basically is kind of chasing our officer friend, and he gets trapped in like this municipal building where probably the police station is and city hall and all of that. And he cannot get out. And we see him running, trying to alert people in this building. So there's a lot of like long hallway, you know, linoleum floor scenes where he's like running and
it's very slippery. It's very slippery for his little dog claws.
As the viewer, you're like, time is of the essence here, people. Like he's got to find someone. And then it's pretty apparent after a while that this isn't going to happen. No one's listening. He sees people leaving. Oh, gosh. And he's going to try like run after them and bark. Mm-hmm. And the door shuts when those people exit.
The big janitor came and they lock it.
And then we start to get these scenes that are super heartbreaking to me because people are on the outside and Benji's on the inside trying to alert people that he's in there. So he's scratching. And all of a sudden we're on the outside as, you know, with the camera. And we just see him. We know he's barking, but we can't hear him.
It's silent. Like, it's just his little mouth.
Right.
Just
and you guys, I swear that dog, you can tell that dog is frantic. I don't know. I got the distinct feeling as these are my people. Yes, they're in danger. Mm-hmm. I have to do something.
I'm going to do everything I can do.
That dog has emotions. That dog is fantastic.
Benji is so smart that he knows these offices in this municipal building have windows that look out and they follow the sidewalk. So he goes out one office into the next one. Same scene. We're scratching at the window.
Silent bark.
And then finally, oh no, is it going to happen? We don't know. Oh my gosh, he's at the last window. Okay. It happens to be a drive-through window, like at a bank teller. It appears this is where you would come to like pay your property taxes or something if you didn't want to go in the building. And he's scratching and moving around and he trips the intercom button on the drive-through window. Bark, bark is no longer a silent bark. It is a herd bark. The security guard hears the bark. Oh my gosh, it's a miracle. Somehow we don't see this part, but he must go in and get Benji out. And now Benji is free. This is storytelling at its best. In the beginning of that scene, there isn't even any music. It is silent as mm-hmm. we learn this loneliness or we feel it. Like there's nothing. Benji is all by himself. And then there does get to be music as the scene goes on. But it really, again, moves the story forward, gives us all those feelings, no dialogue.
Okay, see, that's where I disagree with you. I don't think this moves the story forward. I'm like, why are we here? We just wasted 5 minutes in the police station, and I don't know what.
Well, because
he didn't get a clue.
We do. You guys are forgetting.
What is the clue?
That he sees the crumpled up piece of paper on the floor.
Oh, is that why that's
he's
the clue?
He's going around.
I couldn't
Thank
figure
he's
out.
He's going around okay. like dejected. He's given up. Nobody
yeah,
hears
God.
Him.
Thank you.
And he finally just lays down in the hallway. And he's so sad. And he's like, I'm done. I've done everything I could. And he sees the crumpled up piece of paper. They could have done a flashback that he remembers seeing the crumpled up ransom note. And he feels like, I know what I can do. Right. This is when he knows he's going to need to go back and get the crumpled up ransom note to take it.
That's
and
it.
Show them
Perfect.
That he knows
that
where
is
they
the
are.
Purpose of this scene.
But I mean, I don't know about you guys. The tension, though, in the past like 28 minutes,
yes,
or so, killed me at age 54. How did we endure watching this repeatedly and like just like volunteered to watch it? Like, oh, Benji's on. I want to watch it as a small child. I don't know.
Yeah.
Well,
it
so anyway,
turned me inside out.
Yes. Yeah, so he knows he needs to get the crumpled up ransom.
Yes.
So he runs faster than any dog has ever run in the history of running dogs. Back to the haunted house. Benji sees the crumpled up first attempt ransom note, what he came back for, and grabs it.
He grabs it. He's quite the detective, you guys. He takes that note, and when Mitch tries to grab him, Tiffany bites him on the leg.
Yay, Tiffany! You go!
But then,
oh no.
If you thought the gags were traumatizing, what happens next is the most traumatizing moment of the entire movie. And again, I've got the nipple lightning. I haven't even told you what's happening yet, but I have nipple lightning already. Mitch turns around and kicks Tiffany like he's kicking a field goal.
Oh,
she goes flying and she lands with a thud on the floor, lifeless. And I am scarred. She looks like a feather duster lying on the ground.
I feel like that's what they used when it goes.
Yes.
She goes flying through the air. Like,
yes.
In my mind, I'm like, I hope that's just like a mop head.
Right.
That they had him
Please
kick.
Let it be a mop
but
head.
But you guys, let's take this scene, this one specific part, very, like, break it down. Because one, we never see the kick, okay?
We see. We don't?
We do not. Go back and watch it.
Oh, my God, I made
see?
That up?
Oh, no.
No, no,
like,
you know what's happening, and
okay,
you create it in your mind, but he pulls his foot back, so we know what's going to happen.
Yeah.
Then we go to Benji. I mean, yeah, he does kick her, but we don't see the kick. He goes to Benji, and all we hear is this yelp. Oh. Then we hear a thud, and I guess maybe I don't remember seeing her even fly. I hear the thud, and then we see her on the ground. But so, like, the image of the actual kick and all of that, mm-hmm. we never see the visual of it, but it's told
that
so well. And
so
the sound
fascinating.
Is so done so well that
because
we...
Because I can literally see the whole
of
thing.
Of course
I
we
see,
could.
I see the kick. I
we
see
all
her
have.
Flying. And I need to go back and watch
well,
that.
Go back and watch
it. Because that just shows
it.
You what your mind can do.
But, yeah. But it's important. They set that up for our minds
yes.
to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And it's
exactly.
so specific to all of us and all of you listening
yes.
that we've had several comments on... social media that say when the bad guy kicks Tiffany down the stairs, people
oh,
say. So
it's
their memories. It's so traumatic that not only does he just kick her, he kicks her and she goes flying down the stairs. So like we've all conjured up
yeah.
terrible things about this.
Our yes. minds filled yes. in the gaps.
I wonder if that was something that got like cut from the movie, but
yeah.
that's in some of the it's in, you know promo
yeah,
stuff.
This is so worth study. I'm just dying. I'm just
it is because in mm-hmm. Brian's memory, my husband's memory, she died.
Oh,
well, you
oh, he think. Took it all the way there. Mm-hmm. Oh my God.
Gosh.
Well, what really happens is that remember Benji has the note in his mouth. And we're traumatized by the mop head on the ground.
Right.
But this allows Benji to go. Now the bad guys take off after Benji. He has the OG ransom note in his mouth.
Also, the kids see Benji and they're like,
Benji,
yes. Benji,
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 Benji.
Yes.
yes. But the bad guys, they run after Benji. They're running, but they are weak and flabby and they can't keep up with him. They're also quitters, and they're like, oh, well. And so once again, so Benji keeps going faster, and again, we're like, run, Benji, run. But this time, Benji is running in slow-mo
oh.
with the note in his little mouth, and he's having more flashbacks to mm-hmm. all of his trauma. The gun battle,
oh,
the
terrible.
Gags in the kids' mouths, the kick, and Tiffany lying on the ground lifeless. Mm. Paul and Cindy's crying faces. All of these are flashing as he's running in slow motion. It's a very long run. Remember, this is like 19, 20 miles.
Right.
Especially in slow-mo, right? It's
right.
very, very long. It feels like we're all getting re-injured over and
right.
over as he remembers all these things that scarred us in our youth.
It's his motivation. It
it's
is
his
what
motivation.
Is...
Go, Benji, go!
Right.
He makes it back to Paul and Cindy's house. And guess who's there? Linda Sue.
How?
What? It isn't. It's an inside job. Oh
I
my
wish
God.
We knew though who she was to them. We don't
I,
ever find
we
out.
We do not know the backstory. How is this an inside job? We don't know. She sees Benji with the note, and she
just
grabs
got, like,
it.
I just got a shiver.
I know. She's like, oh no, the dog detective is gonna like. He's gonna ruin my whole thing. She grabs it out of his mouth. And she's like, oh, nothing. It's just an old grocery list. And she puts it in her very cool tooled leather purse.
Yeah, honestly, you guys, by this point, the tension, I'm so wrecked. I'm sweating. 54-year-old Michelle has opened a bottle of wine, gone through
yes.
half of it. Because Linda then drops that beautiful purse. Benji dashes over, grabs the note, gives it to Mary, who gives it to the cops. Now, Keystone cops all start again. And now, though, they're starting like the 6 or 18 mile run.
Oh, my God.
To the haunted house, led by Benji the hero. And you guys, it like literally turns from day to night during
yes,
this run.
It's
they
very
are running
long.
And running. And let's understand that some of these cops, these Keystone cops, aren't fit. But
no.
they're running. And Benji, understand, is a tiny dog who can run very, very, very fast. But they're keeping up. Even Mary and her
yes.
little pumps.
Yes. And her house dress.
Mm-hmm. So basically, 9 miles later, they get there. Of course, just in the nick of time, the kids are rescued. The men are arrested. Tiffany is alive. She gets her leg bandaged at like 10 p.m. by the doctor, we think. So is he a vet?
Yeah,
we don't know.
Mm-hmm.
And happily, of course, because they saved Paul and Cindy's life, Dr. Chapman, mm-hmm. all of a sudden, they don't have germs. They're good. You're not going to die if they bite you. He agrees to let Benji and Tiffany live with them forever.
I got to tell you, when Tiffany comes out of the doctor's office with the little cast on her tiny little leg, I am emotional. I am emotional about the little doggy cast.
Well, anyway, like the movie poster yeah. says, right? Happy, sad, suspense, fun. Most highly acclaimed family picture of all time.
Of all time.
The Dallas Morning News says, there is no Oscar for animal actors, but perhaps they should create a special one for this remarkable performer.
And you guys, I mean, the adventure just can't stop there, right? I mean, this can't be the end of Benji and... his escapades, we've got to have some more movies that come after just Benji. And indeed we do. We have five movies that come after Benji the Original, which, as we said earlier, came out in 1974. I'm going to tell you the other ones, but I'm going to tell you them in the way that the entertainment website, The Wrap, ranks them. So we're going to count them down from worst to best, according to The Wrap. All right, coming in at number six is Oh Heavenly Dog, the 1980 one of follow-ups with Jane Seymour. And this is what got Benji / Ben Jean as a guest judge on Dance Fever.
Oh,
was,
yeah, that's right.
Their role in Oh Heavenly Dog.
I like how you use the neutral pronouns.
I did too. Yeah.
It works. Okay, now moving on to number five would be the 2004 motion picture, Benji, Off the Leash! Exclamation point.
Wait, 2005, did you say?
Four. 2004.
The 2000 is the important part. Okay, good.
Yes, also, well, yeah. Right. And like, what line in the progeny is this Benji?
Yeah,
it
no
has
kidding.
To be like Benji's grandson. Full disclosure, I don't know that I ever watched another one besides.
Oh, no. I didn't either. Mm-mm. I mean, we're like, after the original, why would you? I mean,
you can't. Okay. Yeah. Often imitated.
And actually, probably a good thing, because coming in at number four would be the follow-up to Benji, For the Love of Benji, 1977.
Yeah. I might have seen that one because it sounds really familiar to me, but it also could be because I bought the novella from the Scholastic Book Order.
Yes, exactly. That would be number four. So number three, we have the 1987 film, Benji the Hunted.
Is that the
that
worst
wrong.
Name ever?
That's terrible.
Yeah. Isn't that awful?
I don't like
awful?
It.
Well, that comes in at number three. Okay, get ready, you guys. Coming in at number two, Benji. The Original, 1974.
No. What? No. You're kidding.
No, because they, the Wrap. Now, this
false.
Is according to The Wrap.
Okay.
They give the number one spot to Benji, basically the remake of the original, which was filmed in 2018.
Isn't
so,
that crazy?
This is what The Wrap says. They say the latest
Benji. They were paid by them.
Yeah.
The latest Benji movie might not be as pulse-pounding as the original, but it finds an exceptional balance between suspense, sentimentality, and high-quality filmmaking. There's a really good chance that this movie will make you cry in the opening scene, and that's no easy feat. Sometimes it's sappy, and sometimes the peril may be a little too scary for the younger kids, but the new Benji is the only Benji movie that works on every level.
Okay, I'm going to have to watch
Bullshit.
It. Of course, I'm biased.
I know,
incredibly
I was
biased.
That.
Well, of course. And I'm thinking, how old were the people that reviewed the movie? If they're
Did they
young,
ever, right.
Right. I mean, are they used to, you know, a little more of this advanced filmmaking kind of stuff?
Right, that's what we call
And
it.
They don't know how to use their imaginations. So
they can't
like,
watch a movie with silence.
Right, exactly. Yeah. That's what I'm going to go with.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, they really milked Benji for all he's worth, not only in these you know, movies and TV specials, but like you've pointed out, Michelle, the merch. I mean, there was a lot of merch going on. We had the books, obviously. We had lunch boxes, stuffed animals. We
school
had everything.
Folders.
Yes.
Yeah.
So,
backpacks, probably.
Big stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I would, if you guys don't mind, of course, I found a few interesting facts that I'd like to share in Carolyn's rabbit hole. Is that okay?
Oh, yeah. Please.
And I'd like to also debut the new theme for Carolyn's Rabbit Hole. You're hearing it here for the first time. And
Season
here we go.
Season 12, just delivering.
For sure. Please excuse me. I don't have the best voice, but here we go. Rabbit hole, let's go down the rabbit hole with Carolyn.
That's just a little like jingle. It's
I love it so much. Next time you do it, can I get out my Fisher-Price xylophone? And,
please.
And then after you say, with Carolyn, I'm going to make up a little ding, ding.
I would love that.
Okay.
Yeah, it does need a little musicality to our little sound to it.
Yeah.
Well, because this episode was flirting with being 2 hours long, we decided to move my rabbit hole discussion over to Patreon. So all of our patrons will get to hear all of these fun facts and interesting tidbits that I discovered when I went down my rabbit hole. So if you are not already a patron, we would love for you to join us. You can go to Patreon, that's patreon.com, and search for Pop Culture Preservation Society in that search bubble, or you can click on our link on Instagram or on our website. Thanks so much. Now back to the show.
It's me loving you, loving everyone, everywhere I go.
While it's true that our generation is not the only one to have movies that affected us on so many levels, I think that we can say we had the best ones. Movies like Benji that made us feel all the feels, happy, sad, scared, excited, anxious, exhilarated, live on in us not just as movies, but as events. And they're just one more of those shared experiences that connect us all to each other. Thanks, Benji. And thank you all for listening.
That is so true. All of it. Every single word is so true.
Oh, we love doing this episode. You guys, I love this podcast. I'm going to say it again. And I loved revisiting Benji. And this podcast only exists because of our followers, our listeners, and those of you who support us on Patreon and making one-time donations on PayPal. We love you all.
And today's episode was brought to you by some of these wonderful people: Susan, Joanna, Jane, Tracy, JS, Erica, Pam, Beth, Julie, Robin, Stephen, Sheila, and Rob.
These are just some of the patrons and one-time donors who help us fund this program with their monetary support. Thanks to all of you. In the meantime, let's raise our glasses for a toast, courtesy of Jack and Janet and Chrissy from Three's Company.
And Benji.
And Benji. Two good times.
Two happy days.
To Little House on the Prairie.
Ruff, cheers.
Ruff. Cheers.
Bark, bark.
The information, opinions, and comments expressed on the Pop Culture Preservation Society podcast belong solely to Carolyn, the Crushologist, and Hello Newman, and are in no way representative of our employers or affiliates. And though we truly believe we are always right, there is always a first time. The PCPS is written, produced, and recorded in Minneapolis, Minnesota, home of the fictional WJM Studios and our beloved Mary Richards. Nanu, nanu, keep on truckin', and may the force be with you.